The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Beltway Blitz is coming up in just a moment on Grant and Danny. Remember, in 1 hour, Austin Eckler joins the show right at 5 o'clock. As promised right now, caller number 10, 800-636-1067. You're going to win two tickets to see the Caps and the Sabres Saturday the 14th of December, next weekend at Capital One Arena. For tickets and the complete Caps schedule, go to thefandc.com/contests.
As Washington continues to build the foundation of success on and off the field this season, it's time for you, that's right, you, to plan for your future as well. As the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Condori and Morod can help you update your last will and testament or set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to tell them that Grant and Danny sent you. That is kmlawyers.com.
Let's get to our Beltway Blitz. We'll cover the Caps, who play tonight, the Wizards, and the Commanders, all coming up in the Blitz. Let's go. With a win, the Caps will be back atop not only the division, but the Eastern Conference. They're looking for a fifth straight without Alex Ovechkin, and now they finally got a couple days rest as well. Al Kokin is with us. You'll see him on Monumental Sports. Al, what have you made of how they've played without their captain?
Grant, it's been extremely impressive. I mean, I think it took them those couple games that they lost right after the injury to kind of figure out, okay, this is what the new roles are going to be. Here's where you need to be. Here's what I need to do. I think it took them a little while to get that. But once they did, and I've been tremendously impressed how, you know, any move that Spencer Carberry has made with his lines, with his defense pairs, whatever it is, seems to have paid off. And it's amazing to watch the power play. I know this is an aberration because you can't take the best power play score in history off it and have it get better for the long term. But for the short term anyway, I think there's more movement and players are finding their niche there as well without Ovi. So all things considered, I'm very, very impressed with the way they have moved along without their captain.
Yeah, Al, that's what I was going to ask you about. I'm a pretty simple dude. I don't get that. Yes, you said. Maybe the greatest power play asset, certainly in this team's history, maybe even in league history, he's removed. How are they doing this? I know it's not sustainable to score at this clip, but still, the fact that it's decent at all is kind of remarkable to me. Go into that. What are they doing?
Well, one of the things is it absolutely completely throws off the opposition's pre-scout. You sort of knew, obviously, where one of the guys on the power play was going to primarily be. But this is something, Danny, that really kind of goes back to last year as well, when Kirk Muller joined as an assistant coach and was kind of given the reins for the power play. One of the things he wanted the team to do, including number eight, was to move around more, be less predictable, less set in your way, so to speak. It took them forever to kind of finally do that. But if you remember late in the season when they put on that rush, there were times you'd look up and say, oh, wait, Alex and John Carlson have exchanged positions. Oh, wait, Alex is down by the front of the net now. So there was a little of that to begin with. Now, without him in the lineup, Now guys are very interchangeable. When you watch the power play now, you'll see guys that you look over, well, Carlson starts out in Ovi's normal spot, but now he's moved over to the other side of the ice, or he's down by the goal line, or he and Chychrun have exchanged. So there's really now a system that really accentuates what Kurt Muller wanted, which was the movement and the less predictability. And now, because other teams don't really know how to prepare for it because it's relatively new, that I think has also helped their cause as well.
Smoking out. How about Jacob Chychrun? I know it takes two to tango, but I'd love to have him signed like yesterday to an extension. What's your thought on if that's in the works or what the timeline might be on that?
Well, Grant, I've got to tell you that I just know that, you know, kind of by being around things for a while, this is a guy who's been on their radar for some time. I know they've been trying to get this guy in their organization, and now that he's here, it would make sense, obviously, to do what you suggested, sign him, get him long-term. The question becomes, what does Jacob Chychrun want? And when you're off to the type of start he's off to, still under 30 years of age, so he's really kind of in his prime. You're not signing a guy at 31, 32 to a 7-8 year contract. You know, he's really right there at a ripe spot. Does he look at it and say, you know what, this is really the one time I'm going to have to maximize everything? Or does he say, you know what, I didn't have a good fit with the Arizona Coyotes. Things weren't really going my way in Ottawa. Here, I really love it. This is a perfect fit. Wife, like, you know, all those things have to come into effect. I think if the Capitals make a solid, really fair, good, strong offer, I think the likelihood is there. But again, when you are in the position Jacob Chychrun is in, with a first time he played 82 games in his entire career last year, now off to the start he is this year, if that continues, man, he is a prime candidate for a big payday. Does he settle for what he's comfortable in, or does he look for the big money? That is going to be the thing that's going to have to play out for Jacob Chychrun in his how comfortable am I, and will I walk away for maybe a little more to understand now I've got the right fit in my career?
Now, quick one here. They're coming back and winning these games, which is awesome, but they still have to come back. Defensively, they've let up four or five goals over the last three. Not concerned, just something I'm keeping an eye on. Your thoughts?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, Danny, because I was thinking about this afternoon as I was getting ready for the game. You're kind of like, all right, you know, everything is going right. As we talked about, the line settled in right. You know, guys now picking up on the power play, the penalty, boom, boom, boom. You can mark off all these things going right. The one thing right now is what you just said. They're letting in too many goals. Now, if you go back to when Ovi, oddly enough, was in the lineup, you don't really think of him as the defensive guy. But they were playing a pretty good structured system. There was a stretch of games there where it was two goals, given up. Well, they need to kind of get back to that. You're putting a little too much pressure now on Logan Thompson and Charlie Lindgren by the volume and the quality of shots they're getting. I think that is something, if Spencer Carberry looks at this, maybe this two-game reset, you know, they played a lot of games, they were tired. This is a two-day reset now. Is going to be interesting to me, because this San Jose team, you may not see the record to say, wow, better watch out for them, but lately they're playing really good hockey, and they are scoring at the same clip that the Capitals have been scoring on in these last six games. Tonight's a good test to see if they can get back to a better structured defensive system, because this San Jose team is scoring at a really great clip.
Al, thank you as always, buddy. Talk soon.
Good talking with you, boys. Thanks.
You got it,
you
my
too,
friend.
Bud.
Hit that wizard sounder, Darris. Our guy Dave Johnson, play-by-play voice of the Washington Wizards. Cleveland tonight, Dave. Get a set.
Yeah, Cleveland's a big challenge. Look, they won their first 15 games. Then they lost two in a row to the Atlanta Hawks. No coincidence, both games, Donovan Mitchell had off-night shooting, but returned to normal service on Sunday against the Boston Celtics. But this Wizards team is coming off. I know it was a loss to Milwaukee Bucks, but I actually thought maybe one of the most complete performances of the year. I mean, they had in rebounds, including offensive rebounds against the Milwaukee Bucks team that, yeah, does have Giannis. Points in the paint, points off turnovers, free throws. So many numbers that you look at, you say, you know what, that's a recipe for a victory. So the Wizards did everything against the Milwaukee Bucks, one of the elite teams in the NBA, to secure a win, except win the three-point battle. And that turned out to be the difference of the game. So you walk away saying, this team will learn. And it's about fine margins. And this is the learning experience when you do the right thing against Giannis. Shut him down. Double team him, including Alex Saar as part of that double team. But he finds Torian Prince, who hits a three to really determine that game down the stretch. What this game does come down to sometimes is making shots at critical moments, and that's what this young team has to do.
Dave, Corey Kispert has struggled some. He scored 16 points in 31 minutes in the Bucks game that you're referencing, so it was good to see him put the ball in the hoop again. But what have you seen from him?
Well, he needs to be more consistent from the three-point distance. You mentioned the 16 points. I don't have in front of me how many were threes. The great thing about Corey Kispert is that, you know, as we've talked about, he's not a one-trick pony. If you run him off the three-point line, he's going to attack and he's going to finish and maybe get an N1. He is a three-point shooter, and he will make the shots he needs to make. And just quite frankly, he needs to be more consistent, and he knows that, and he's talked about that. Shooters, they don't forget how to shoot, so I have every confidence in that. But he's taking a step forward in a lot of ways, and especially on the defensive end as well. So, it's great to see he's the elder statesman on this team now, if you can believe that. And that also has been fun to watch him grow over the last few years.
Dave, asking you again about Kyle Kuzma. Just, it feels like he's a passenger here, hadn't really found his footing. I had a coach, it's not the same as being in the NBA, obviously, I was a kid, but he said, if your shot's not falling, that's going to happen, find something else to do. And you look at a game the other day, he had one rebound or two rebounds or one assist or a couple turnovers here and there. Just feels like he's not in lockstep just yet. What are you seeing from him?
Well, you think about it. I don't have it in front of me how many games he's now missed, but he's not going to play tonight. The rib strain, and he had a groin injury that after the Wizards got that first win over the Atlanta Hawks, their first win of the season. He missed some time with that. So, I'm not making excuses for it, but it's hard to get in rhythm, or not excuses, but trying to give a reason for it when you're dealing with injuries and in and out of the lineup. And in and out of the lineup with a new team. We talked about this on the broadcast the other night that, Brian Keefe continues to experiment with different lineups. And, by the way, that will impact some of the younger players as they're trying to get up to speed. I mean, Bilal Coulibaly offensively was not very productive against the Bucks, but part of that is who you're playing with and feeling, knowing the tendencies of your teammates. And it's not as simple as, all right, he averages 10. He's going to definitely get 10. If you mix up the rotation he's a part of, it makes it difficult. But for Kyle Kuzma, you're right. It's been a season where he's not been able to seize the moment because you think, we see him coming back. And then, he suffers a rib strain and he's out. So it's, that is hindering whatever progress he was hoping to make from several seasons of career years now with the Wizards.
Dave, thank you. We appreciate you, bud.
I appreciate it. And listen, I got to follow Smoking Al, so that was great today, too.
Hey, great lead-in. Dynamite.
The way you want to do it. Let's do this thing. All right, Blitz continues with our guy Scott Abraham. And we talk football with him. Scotty, the wheels were coming off the wagon, but for now, order restored. How about that win on Sunday for the Commanders?
Yeah, the sky's not falling. Put the panic button away. That was a win that they had to get, and they certainly – what I like, guys, is they came out there and they punched Tennessee in the mouth, and they kept punching them. They did not let their foot off the gas. They finished, which has been a problem for several games leading up to the Titans game. So it was great to see them get back on track, now get some rest, and come out for the four-game finish.
You get a chance to talk to a lot of these guys, and coaching staff included. I got the sense that Cliff Kingsbury was a little bit annoyed at maybe people asking questions about things that have happened in the past with his offenses or otherwise. And this almost felt like him, saying, all right, fine, I'll show you. And they had a great offensive performance here. What was your sense of that leading up to this one from Kingsbury?
Yeah, I chuckled at his triple option comment at the end of his press conference. And I did appreciate the little lining up Terry McLaurin on the other side of the field just to kind of do a little dig to the media and the fans that have been complaining of Terry lining up always exclusively on the one side of the field. So, again, the numbers don't lie, guys. And the Cliff per se was a real thing and could be a real thing in terms of defenses catching up to what he's trying to do. And it just shows the numbers from Arizona that toward the second half of the regular season, those numbers start to dip. But hopefully that's not the case here in Washington. There should be a lot of confidence and belief coming out of the bye, getting a Marshawn Lattimore back, going on the road against a Saints team that's not going anywhere, where you should hopefully get another win in your pocket. And that was I can't emphasize enough, guys, how important that win was against Tennessee just to right the ship. You don't want to go into a bye week with a four-game losing streak. So this was a much-needed win for Washington.
Yeah, it sure was. They got what the doctor ordered, to be clear. Scott Abraham, Channel 7 in town on the Commanders. Cliff Kingsbury's future, if they stay hot offensively, he becomes a hot candidate. Based on what you know of him, what you've seen this year, do you think he's a guy that would want to go be a head coach again, or would he be comfortable hanging around for another year?
I think Cliff would want another chance at being a head coach. It didn't end well with Arizona, and I think there's a part of him that wants to see if he can get another chance. Everybody wants a second chance at things in life. You know, you would want a second chance. I would want a second chance at things. And I think that's just the innate competitor that Cliff is. Former player, worked his way up the coaching ladder. I think if the right opportunity came about, I think Cliff would be another head coach in the NFL and give it a chance.
Scott, defensively, what's the difference that Marshawn Lattimore is going to make if and when he plays, thinking about a week after next?
Well, I mean, when healthy, Marshawn Lattimore is quote-unquote a dog, as he described to us during his first media availability, and he can lock down one end of the field, one side of the field, and that's just a huge benefit to everybody, from the linebackers to the D-tackles to the D-ends. You don't have to necessarily worry about that one side of the field, and it allows, as Dan Quinn has said numerous times, that you can do different things defensively, schematically, knowing you have a guy that you could put out there on an island on their number one receiver and shut that down. So it's just going to be a huge benefit. He's gotten some time to rest and heal up that hamstring. You got to hope that he's a full go. And what a luxury to have a four-time Pro Bowler come back for a four-game finish. That's really exciting, guys.
Scott, we appreciate you, brother. Thank you.
See you, fellas. Take care.
See you, man.
There are actually two developing stories on the Commanders' front that we want to get to as soon as we return. The first of them, the team has hired a new team president to replace Jason Wright. Moving forward, we knew that search was ongoing. We're expecting, before the first of the year, the hire to be made. And they have announced with a statement today who their new team president is. Pretty fascinating background. Also, news on the negotiation that's still ongoing as the Commanders try to get the D.C. land that they can build a stadium on over at RFK for the 2.0 version of RFK Stadium. So we'll get you those updates. Very, very big news today for the Commanders as soon as we return on Grant and Danny.
Hey, it's Mark Schler with the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. The NFL season is in full swing, and I'll be here to break down all the action like no one else can. Follow and listen to the Stinkin' Truth Podcast on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you, Earl. Welcome back. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. So a couple of big developing stories here to get into on the Commanders' front. To tell the truth, Monday has turned into a breaking news Tuesday, Danny.
Whoa. Okay.
The Commanders' power structure has been revamped. They have brought in a pretty significant piece today, hiring new team president Mark Klaus. Klaus served as the president and CEO of the Campbell's Company since 2019. That's not Jason Campbell, right?
No.
That is like Campbell's Soup, I think. Correct?
I think so, yeah.
Fills the spot filled by Jason Wright, who will be leaving the organization at the end of the season. So he comes on now as the president. I guess for the moment, they have like two listed presidents, essentially. Although Wright can show him some of the ropes and go over some of the things they've been doing, and Krause can take the things he likes and not do the things that he doesn't like and start to steer it in his own image moving forward. But Jason Wright, we found out earlier this year, was not going to be back next year, which it makes some sense, right? I mean, the Harris ownership group came in. They weren't going to blow out everybody right away. They needed somebody to help continue to facilitate some of the business changes that had already begun over the couple of years before they got here. And unlike Dan Snyder, who just fired, you know, 100 people on day one, you try to figure out who's good, who isn't. But you're going to want somebody who you trust, who you handpick, who aligns with you culturally, who shares an opinion with you to execute your vision. It's like a head coach picking his own quarterback or a GM who inherits a head coach. You probably want your own person in there. And today was the day that they hired Mark Klaus to leave Campbell's to come to the Washington Commanders.
So there have been a number of scenes in movie history that have been like this. Think of The Godfather. You can think of The Dark Knight Rises when they were talking about Commissioner Gordon. To me, Jason Wright's a wartime consigliere. In other words, when everything is terrible, when everything is so bad, and every headline you're involved in is this investigation or this lawsuit or this investigation about a lawsuit or this deposition comes out from someone else's lawsuit, everything is bad every day. You need that guy, right? Like, he's really good. He was excellent at that, right? As sort of the steadying hand, he became the de facto spokesman every time Snyder was in the news again for like one of the wrong reasons. And so he was the dude at the owners' meetings and stuff. He was going through all that kind of stuff. Well, now we got a bunch of goodwill. And to your point, you want your own business folks in there that align with your vision, et cetera. It doesn't mean, you know, at the highest levels, Jason Wright did a good, bad, and different job. I have no idea, honestly. I wouldn't even know how to grade him. The stuff that we saw that would touch the people didn't pass the flying colors, I would say, in a number of cases.
Yeah, they struggled in a lot of the public-facing endeavors that he led. Think about some of the highlights or lowlights, including, you know, whether it's the years on the patch and the rebrand, the rollout of 2222, which was a losing effort anyway.
Sure.
I mean, there was no one that would have done that well because nobody wanted it, but we've said our piece that the way that they did it wasn't very good. And then obviously the Sean Taylor fiascos, like there have been several of those mm-hmm. that publicly lead you to believe there wasn't enough institutional knowledge, among other complaints. But that really was only a small part of his job. And maybe even, I would say, the least important part of his job. Like, significant, but more significant is selling tickets, making the season ticket holders, and probably more important than that, the suite holders happy, getting more people to spend lots of money at the stadium, having people be willing to work with the team in terms of advertisers. Mm-hmm. And I'd be willing to bet that in all those areas, there's been some pretty major growth from the day that he got here, which is just inevitable with a better ownership situation.
Sure.
But that's going to be on his resume.
Without a doubt. So, yeah, I mean, this is natural in the course of things. And most businesses, this is what happens. I mean, you look at this guy, Klaus. Obviously, I don't know him at all. I never heard the name until I saw the press release like everyone else. But he'd been with several brands that you recognize. Everything from Rao's, that make delicious tomato sauce, to Goldfish, Pepperidge Farm. Like, that's what happens in business. You're the president at this really high-level thing, and you do it for, you know, 2 years and change, and you burn out, then you got to go on to the next challenge as you implement your stuff. It's one of those like high turnover deals. So they're treating this very much like, you know, Fortune 500 business, and they want that person doing that, and then there's a whole other silo that's football, which to me is the right structure.
It's the only structure.
Right.
It's so correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this guy was at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, where he played basketball. He was a 6.5-year helicopter pilot, and he became a captain in the military. I guess not a commander. They might do it differently. I don't know what I don't know. But that would be poetic. But Captain Klaus is what they called him. But yeah, man, they needed to make a hire. There were some names floating around that were more familiar to the area. This is not a name that was on my radar, but he's certainly extremely accomplished in business. And going back to what you just said about the separation of church and state, essentially,
mm-hmm.
like football and business, it's critical to me. This is one of the lessons, I think, that we should learn from the Jason Wright era. And I personally like Jason Wright. I think he did a impossible job, and the results weren't always good. But I think everyone was going to be unpopular and do a bad job. And my interactions with Jason were always very, very pleasant, right? That's what I can tell you.
Yeah, same here.
Having said that, Jason Wright was billed, essentially, at the time he came in, as a hero. Like, he was very publicly trotted out as a white knight. They used to do this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They did it with Scott McLuhan, which went up in flames. They did it with Brian LaFemina, who lasted 6 months, went up in flames. By the way, he was doing a good job, and they just said, you know what? We don't like how you're
doing. Bruce was like, I don't like your face. Get out of here.
The stories that I've always heard about that was they didn't like that he was getting so much credit for a lot of the good things that were happening. So they blew him out. But then Jason Wright came in, and he was the guy. Like, it's almost like a Wizard of Oz thing. I just went and saw Wicked with my daughter this weekend. You going to see that at all?
No. It's a hard pass.
I guess with two boys, it's not as much.
There's 0.0 interest.
So my daughter has been waiting for months to go see it. And it's really, really good. But in The Wizard of Oz, essentially, in Wicked, the story from the witch's perspective, like it's all smoke and mirrors, and you need a good guy, and you need a bad guy, and you need someone to present to everybody. Like, Jason Wright became the face. They're like, all right, this will get Grant and Danny excited for an hour. This really sharp guy who says all the right things, who comes in here to clean house. And that's basically how they used him. And then when they couldn't use him in that way anymore, it went away. But the lesson to me that's learned, he was always kind of rubbing up against football in a way. I remember he used to go on NFL Network. They'd ask him about, like, the draft class and, like, the running backs on the team because he played in the NFL. Some of that's inevitable because he was a player.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I just don't think that that works. You know, it doesn't, to me, it doesn't make sense that you would have Jason Wright and Ron Rivera, like, ever conversing about the roster. I just watched the press conference when Matt Eberflus got fired. I think the Bears president's Kevin Warren, the old Big Ten commissioner, and Ryan Poles is the GM. And Warren kind of ran the whole show. And it was kind of odd because they're starting to get questions in the presser like, wait, so if you guys disagree, like, who calls the shots? And it was a really long-winded answer where he's like, oh, we'll come to an agreement together. Like, yeah, but who has final say? He's like, well, he's the GM, so he runs football. Like, that guy's too involved. Mm-hmm. Like, that should be Ryan Poles' press conference.
Yeah.
You fired Matt Eberflus. You're hiring the coach. He'll help you. But that guy shouldn't be sitting there leading the press conference.
Yeah, you hire him, and then you send him to over to Kevin's office for terms of the contract.
Exactly.
Right?
But to me, that should be, like, presidents of teams run the business side to the point where we shouldn't be ever talking about Mark Klaus. Like, his name, no one should know the name of the president. The guy that—
I'm with you, actually.
Over at Monumental that does such a good job. I think he's been in with the Junkies a couple times, so people have probably heard his name. But Jim Van Stone, who's fantastic and just does it correctly, kind of works in anonymity. No fan knows who that is. That, to me, that's the gig. Like, you shouldn't be public and front, you know, front-facing and on NFL Network. Like, no. Go do the stuff behind the scenes, the business stuff. Work the relationships, get the sponsors. And I think that's what Klaus will probably do.
Yeah, it should be, we hear about you now. Then the occasional statement about, we're really excited for the new branding of Nabisco club seats or whatever. And then he's quoted in some sort of team website statement.
Klaus.
And then the day you go somewhere else, that's when we should hear your name as the team president. Right? To me, honestly, this is behind the scenes, big wig, glad handing politician lobbying stuff that should not affect the fan day to day. Honestly. I mean, I guess it brushes up to season ticket holders and customer service and care, but to me, he's like big fish to fry guy, right?
So when the news broke during our Beltway Blitz, like just a little radio insider, Darius, Ryan, me and you are kind of in talk back on, hey, the commander's named their president. What do we do with this? Do we want to do cut into the segment and breaking news? Pretty much in no other market in America is a business person being hired by a football team relevant. The reason it is here is because Jason Wright's name was basically the biggest name in the organization for a couple of years. When Dan was sitting everything out and he was the face and the voice of the team, that role changed. And I hope they get back to, you hear about Josh Harris, everything football goes through Adam Peters, which is obvious. And then I'll have to, in 3 months, go, wait, what's the name of that president from Campbell's? That is it Mark?
Is it Dieter? No, it's Klaus.
Klaus, that's what it is. Mark Klaus. Like, that's to me what a team president, as a fan, should be. We're a little more plugged in because we have dealings with the team or whatever. So I'll meet this guy and build a relationship maybe at games or whatever, and I'll remember his name. But I think the average fan that's just going over there, sitting there watching games on Sunday, there's no reason to know.
It should never cross your radar, honestly. It's like, you know, who's playing right guard today? I mean, that's where the depth of it is. Now, if your season ticket experience gets worse or your game day experience gets worse, I suppose he's going to oversee that to some degree, although I'd even like to compartmentalize that, to be honest with you.
To a large degree.
But
I mean, it's under his purview. He's not going to be the guy. There's a person in charge of the stadium experience, but they answer to him. I mean, everything that involves with money being made, season ticket holders, sponsorships, starts with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'd even try to compartmentalize it even more, to be honest with you. I would have like a dedicated, I'm a customer team president almost, but whatever, what do I know? I've never run an NFL organization before. But I would even keep this, you know, the glad-handing, high-fiving, lobbying, corporate Craig, let's make sure all the suites are full, dude, even separate from the regular fans, right? Just because this feels like someone that's very far away, and I would love my fan team president almost to be right there kissing babies and handing out pennants and flags when you walk in.
I've got an idea
mm-hmm.
that I want to bounce off you guys, and I will go around the room here and get a yay or a nay from all three of you. Majority rules. My question is, I just forgot his name already. Mark Krause?
Klaus.
Mark Klaus comes from Campbell's, right?
Okay.
The new stadium over at the RFK site is an indoor Campbell's can. It looks exactly like a Campbell's can, like the ridges. It says Campbell's on it. It has, it's like a can that's like half in the ground, basically. And it's just a big Campbell's can, and we go to the games at the can. And everybody that's coming to play the Commanders in D.C. is at the can. You are looking live at the can in Southeast Washington, D.C., where the 4-1 Commanders look for their fifth win of the 2030 season.
The can.
So it's an indoor stadium shaped exactly like a Campbell's can. Because Campbell's spends so much money. Because they're buddies here now. So they just give you
got a guy. Yeah.
All of the millions to have a Campbell's can stadium. Danny, yay or nay, they play their games starting in 2030 in D.C. at the can.
It's a nay, and here's why. That's also another nickname for jail. Like, he spent a year in the can. Okay. You know what I mean? That sounds bad.
Okay.
I don't think I want that.
Right. Darius.
If we could come up with an alternate word for the can, like, just, I don't know, the soup or something. There's got to be another word other than
they're
the
at the soup du jour today.
Well, I think the whole point is it's shaped exactly like a Campbell's can, and you call it the can.
Yeah, I can't do that.
They're at the noodle soup today.
No.
I like that Danny's issue was jail and not a toilet, by the way. Clary.
I was trying to be more polite.
Who's your guy?
I'm your guy.
I'm in.
I'm
not even doing a bit. Like, I think the design of like a can stadium, like halfway, like just half a can. And the other like half the can is below ground.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the armory a little bit. And have like the shades on the outside of each end zone. You can close it, you can open it. I think I'm not even doing a bit. I think it's a great idea.
Campbell's hooks you. They give you all the money because their guy Klaus is calling the shots. Where's the game this weekend? It's at the can. I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
It's at the Chunky Soup Can.
Speaking of the stadium, there's news on that front as well.
Uh-huh.
This is actually interesting. Like a possible negotiation that involves fighter jets.
This is
hands.
Something, by the way.
We'll give you your land, but we need fighter jets. I'm sorry. What did you just say?
I'm sorry.
I thought you said fighter jets. Grant and Danny on the fan. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on the Fan. Austin Eckler is on the show at 5:00.
That will always be cool. It's always fun to talk to Austin Eckler, especially after he's missed a couple of weeks. He's on injured reserve with a concussion. What did he think from the sidelines watching Washington get back on the good foot, winning the football game like they did this past weekend, post-stretch run, his prognosis rest of the season? Can't wait to talk to him.
So the other development on the Commanders front today is from the Washington Post. A couple of their politics reporters as well as sports reporter Sam Fortier combining on a headline here where Maryland senators apparently want D.C.'s Air National Guard Squadron in exchange for an RFK deal that could ultimately bring the Commanders back to the city. So to say this differently, fighter jets are currently the sticking point in a negotiation, as if this is some trade where Maryland is holding out because you need senatorial support, right? You need the lawmakers to be willing to give you the land. And they're saying, same, this is, you know, if you go back to like Louise Lucas, the difference is they're not putting out a bunch of memes. They're just like, you know, negotiating. But these senators in Maryland are saying, hey, we'll let you have the land. We want the Air National Guard fighter jets. Now, have you read into this? What does that actually mean?
So I'm again, could not be more out of my depth on this one. I'm out of my depth a lot. This one's special, okay? I don't know how many Air National Guard units there are or how many fighter jets there are in a squadron.
Why does the state need that? So
again,
like, I'm going to read this real quick.
Yeah.
If D.C. gives their state, meaning Maryland, one of its Air National Guard squadrons, which how many is that? How many planes is that?
Again, great question.
The lawmakers will not oppose a bill allowing the district to redevelop the RFK Stadium site, according to three people with knowledge of the negotiations. Why does the state need those jets?
Because I guess they don't have them, and they
would
like
their
own.
What do you do with them?
Different stuff. That's, I think, clearly at the core of this, right? Think about all the different things. Now, in all sincerity, there are quick response things needed. So, for example, someone violates airspace in Washington, D.C. You sometimes have to scramble jets very quickly. I don't know who's doing that. I don't know if that's Air Force Base that does that. I mean, there's all sorts of different jurisdictions at play here.
Do you
right?
remember, this has been now a couple years, but do you remember when there was that sonic boom? And the sonic boom was based on a scrambling of jets? Do you remember this story?
No, remind
me. It was fascinating. So I don't remember exactly what happened, but like somebody was flying somewhere where they weren't supposed to and not listening to things or something. Like some random ham and egger, I'm pretty sure. Just in his probably his little
some
Cessna.
Jobber in his little lawnmower plane.
Some donk. And so it got to a point where it was so like perilous toward the city or whatever, where they're going, something's not quite right. And I want to say they didn't launch from like Andrews Air Force Base. I'd have to look the story up. But it might have been Annapolis, if I remember correctly, or even like West Virginia or something. And so they scrambled these jets, to your point. But it was such an insane noise because they were flying so fast.
Yep.
Doing such military movie stuff that in my house and in your house and in Darius's house and in every house of every person listening right now, no matter where you were sitting, you heard what sounded like someone crashed a car into the car in your driveway. Like it was that loud. It was called a sonic boom. I'd never heard of it. I was fascinated for like 3 days. But anyway, I bring this up, Danny, because those jets got scrambled like you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So Maryland wants a jet to scramble in that situation?
They want their own set. Now, I don't know if they have them or don't have them or they want another squad. I don't know.
What's Andrews Air Force Base? They don't have 50 jets sitting over there?
That might be a federal thing. Again, this is so – I couldn't be more above my pay grade on this in terms of what I know,
expert.
What I don't. Yeah, I mean, I've long been a proponent of the F-16 over the F-15. I mean, we're talking about design flaws. But I don't know – exactly the point of this. I do know that this now seems to be a Chuck Schumer production where he's brokering this deal between the parties. The Maryland senators are basically like, we'll drop our fight knowing we're going to lose the team out of Maryland, knowing that we're just going to give away this land in D.C. for folks, presumably then, to then use it to build a new stadium, and in exchange, give us some fighter jets. And D.C.'s reluctant. Eleanor Holmes Norton basically said, I find that troubling. And there's a couple other quotes in here as well where it's kind of a sticking point. So it's just, this is just a reminder that in Missouri, like the state house is like, we want a little bit more funding for discount bus fare. All right, done. You get a stadium. Here it's like 77 different, you know, the National Guard is now involved for some reason, just trying to get all the ducks in a row just to put a big piece of stadium up on some ground. Just different, man.
The flight squadron is one of three requests Maryland's two senators, who would prefer to keep the commanders in Landover, have made in exchange for backing the bill that would give D.C. control of federally owned RFK's site. They have also requested a public statement from the commanders about their preferred location for the next stadium and assurances about what the team would build in place of Northwest Stadium. So they want the team to come out publicly and say, we want to be in D.C., and here's what we're going to do in Landover when we leave the stadium. One of the things I've always thought is if they end up in D.C., they will build their team facility elsewhere. I think it should be in Virginia, somewhere out where everyone wants to live. The problem with doing it in Landover is now you're asking guys basically to go live in that area by the stadium.
Well, that's what Maryland wants, I'm sure.
That's what they want, but yeah. I don't know that the houses are there. You know,
yeah.
It's not Ashburn or Loudoun County out there. So that's interesting. Senator Ben Cardin from Maryland has emphasized the importance of the flight squadron in the deal. D.C. leaders have signaled a reluctance to give up their National Guard squadron. Wow. More on this. We'll get to Fortier on at 6 o'clock. But, yeah, it's a trade, man. How about that? Willie in D.C. was actually in the Maryland National Guard. I want to squeeze him in really quick. We got Austin Eckler at the top of the hour. But, Willie, what can you tell us?
Hey, so, yeah, I was in the Maryland International Guard. We actually, they're losing their flying mission. They have A-10s. The Air Force is actually retiring those. So this sounds like the Maryland Senators are trying to leverage the F-16s from D.C. so they can keep their flying mission.
So explain it to me, because I'm dumber than that. I'm still missing something. So why are they losing their flying mission? And does losing their flying mission meaning they lose the jets, or do they not currently own the jets?
Yeah, so the jets belong to the government, the federal government. So with them losing their jets, they're trying to scramble to find a new flying mission. So every state has a flying mission, and these planes, they support state missions, but then they also get federally activated to go deploy, and this helps them stay current and things. So with Maryland not having a flying mission and it belongs to D.C., even though the D.C. Guard is at Andrews in Maryland, it doesn't belong to the Maryland Air National Guard.
So, like, they instead of spending for brand new, you know, billions of dollars for a new fleet of planes, so to speak, they're like, these guys, we'll just do this, and it doesn't cost us anything.
Right.
Is it like that?
Thanks for the call, buddy.
I wonder?
Yeah, that's a good question. I wonder how, you know, how many jets are in a squadron. I should have asked him that. But, like, are you trying to get Garrett Wilson and Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers, or do you just need a Breece Hall? Or, like, is Tyler Conklin
coming? Answer that.
And, like, C.J. Mosley and Will McDonald?
Mm-hmm.
Or would you also need Javon Kinlaw and Quinnen Williams? How many are we talking about?
I want to do the trade back for Mike Williams, too. Like, can I undo that?
Austin Eckler next. We're going to get to the bottom of his recovery so far and when he'll be back on the field. You're listening to Grant and Danny.